Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just talked to his wife. She's very keen to have an open relationship. Just immediately said that was fine. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello, welcome. Hope you're all enjoying your mugs. your expensive mugs. Buyer's remorse. No refunds. Thank you very much to the people who last week were in the audience. We allowed them to come back in gratitude for supporting fantastic charity. This is Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Ian Walkman the other day. He invented the Walkman. Got a lot of money from the Walkman. He's wired for sound. He calls it Rahulastabra, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. We'll see if that catches on. Lovely to see you all. Thank you very much for coming out. We've got a lovely show for you today. As I said, I've been in Lowestoft recently. We went to a fish restaurant on Sunday for fish and chips. But right by our table was a big fish tank with actual fish from the sea in there that presumably are there, be eaten. I was eating my meal of fish and chips with these kind of glum-looking fish in the tank right in my line of vision, looking at us, you know, as we ate our meal. It felt a bit awkward until I realised that they must be bad fish who'd been committing some kind of fish crime. And this was their punishment, wasn't it, to having to watch us eat their fish brothers, knowing that soon it would be their fate as well, but not knowing when it would be their turn. That's the punishment there. They were probably fish paedophiles. They probably had sex with some fish eggs or something, and that's... You don't have to feel bad for them, so I enjoyed eating my paedophile fish. Can't say that anymore, can you? I don't know. I don't know what you can say anymore. It was quite disconcerting, is what I'm saying. If I had a fish restaurant, I wouldn't put fish in the fucking tank swimming around by the table. That's what I'm saying. I used to be vegetarian. It made me think twice. And I will be again, as we all will be. I would like to thank this week for backing the Kickstarter. She doesn't want anything said apart from her name, which I've written out phonetically and now I'm not confident I can pronounce correctly. It's Louise Trost. So thank you very much for your support. If I said it wrong, get in touch and I'll say it right another time. That's the way these things go. Right, I think we're going to crack straight on. We've got a lovely show for you tonight. My guests this week are probably best known as Steve T and Pete Lazarus from Smell Investigations. That's why we're here. They're both in it. We here, please welcome Freya Barker and Celeste Ring, aka Lady Susan. Here they are. Come in. Welcome. Okay, let me pour you some. Now, don't auction off our mugs.
I can't.
We haven't got so
can't
many
promise
mugs.
Promise that, actually.
Okay.
Cannot promise that. Hello.
They've got a lot of depth, haven't they?
They're big mugs. Well, the reason they're big mugs, yeah. I was going to tell you backstage, but I'll tell you now, because we're on stage all of a sudden, I was talking to David Mitchell, who was a guest on the last series, said, we've got to get like a little present for the guests. And I said, we are thinking of getting like a water bottle, like, you know, like that you can carry your water around in. And David Mitchell said, I get given so many of those, and you can only use. It's kind of crazy.
He hates bottles, David.
He does.
It's a very on-brand critique.
It is. And he said, "What I would really like is a mug, but a really big mug, because I like to give the tea bag a chance to, you know,
do its stuff,
make the most of it." Yeah. So we tried to get these are the biggest we could get. To be honest, I'd like a bit bigger.
Well, no.
I sent one to David Mitchell. He hasn't responded, so I think it's not big enough.
Yeah, I'm quite small.
Yeah,
it's just. It's a lot of money.
You look like a borrower with that.
Yeah, I feel like one.
We did do that just to make you feel uncomfortable, just to make you feel self-conscious.
Just destabilised at the beginning.
Yeah. What was... this was presumably a sketch you were in together. Was it the Smell Investigations or the Smell Investigators?
Smell Investigators.
Investigators,
many years ago, yeah.
What was what smells were you investigating?
From what I read, so...
And I can't believe this has come up.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate you getting straight to the heart of who we are.
Yeah.
We like to dress up as two men called Steve and Pete from Middlesbrough. And they just...
They just went around identifying smells. That was a sketch.
We just went around Peckham.
It is the title.
It was like onions. A bin. Fucking hell, I don't know.
It was not... It wasn't what you would call like a sort of, you know, watertight premise sketch. It was just some guys going around.
Oh, and then you threw up in that Asda car park in the sketch.
Oh, in the, yeah.
She gets so overwhelmed when she remembers what the smell is that you throw up sort of on me.
Yeah.
Really grounded stuff that I think we can all
Are they the same characters that are in the series?
Yes.
Yeah, they're old. Yeah, they're very old.
Yeah. That's good. So are you from Middlesbrough?
I'm from just outside of it.
My family are all from Middlesbrough.
Nice.
We worked out when Bob Morton was on how close we lived to each other. We planned the route, but if you live outside of Middlesbrough, I can't go that far.
Yeah, let's
Roman Road. They lived in Clepston Avenue.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
No.
It's near Roman Road.
I know where Roman Road is.
Yeah, so if you get down to Roman Road,
how do we
get to your place from there?
Actually, it's sort of technically the posh end, so you're going to need a car. Right. It is one bus an hour, and they do stop at six. So,
okay. And you're from Wolverhampton.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, these are two of the worst places in the United. I hope you don't mind me saying. I've toured the United Kingdom quite extensively.
Yeah.
I can say it about Middlesbrough because my family are from there.
I'm
not really allowed to say it about Wolverhampton, but it is really shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're gonna stand for that?
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like last time I drove into Wolverhampton, it felt like it was. It's sort of been, or a nuclear strike had already happened.
Yeah. It's, you know, it hasn't had a lot of investment.
No, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's one of those things where now I don't live there anymore. I have a certain amount of affection for it. But obviously, growing up there, I did think it was really shit and was praying to leave.
They're lovely people, as are the people of Middlesbrough. Mm. And they have to be, because they live in such shitholes. They have to be nice.
They've got to make it work. They've got a chippy northern / Midlands attitude.
Yeah.
And the Slade Rooms is a great venue. I haven't played Middlesbrough, but only once, I think. Where would I have played?
Town Hall.
Yeah, it probably was the Town Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Little Theatre in Middlesbrough?
No, it wasn't. Maybe. I'd never play the Little Theatre. Not me. Not with my Middlesbrough following. So let's get the sort of boring stuff out of the way first. How did you two...
Sorry, I'm just enjoying this.
Look, maybe we need to deal with the fact that I've just sat back in the chair.
There's a lot of depth in the mug. A lot of depth in the chairs.
My feet don't touch the floor, okay?
This is partly how you got together, right? Because you were...
You
were stuck on a chair.
And
your tiny legs sticking
The police up. Were like, we're not coming out, fire brigade. Didn't even pick up. And then she comes along.
Yeah.
Helps me down. Incredible. And then we thought, let's do sketch comedy. How did we meet?
Yes, that was what the boring question I was going to establish, first of all. I know the answer, but I would like
do
to
you?
Hear.
Why is it like, what do you think the answer
what I think happened is you were both working as actors. You were working in, I want to say Tom's Midnight Garden, but it isn't that. It's Mr. Tom's, Ian Tom's.
Ian Tomlinson's Garden.
Yeah. You were playing a child in a play.
I was playing a child in Goodnight, Mr. Tom.
Goodnight, Mr. Tom. That's the one I was looking for. And you had a friend and who introduced you both.
This is great.
Yeah.
And then you ditched. You worked together with that friend for a while in a threesome.
Yeah.
And then
then
you ditched him.
Yeah.
Because he had a penis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah. When we found out, we were like... No way, buddy!
Fuming. Absolutely fuming.
Don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
But that's quite... There's quite a lot of people who have started in acting and sort of then pushed through to comedy. Not that you'd stopped acting. We'll talk about that later. But why did you decide to go down the comedy route? And how did you do that from being in...
Well... I mean, the thing about doing comedy is that you're doing your own stuff.
Yeah.
So, right, like, straight away there's, like, an autonomy.
So it's all your fault.
It's all, yeah.
When it goes wrong.
You've got no one else to blame.
Yeah.
But also, I was playing children in theatre, like, a lot.
Yeah.
I'm 5 foot tall, and I was playing, you know, I was, like, in, you know, late 20s, playing, like, 12-year-old children.
Yeah.
And that really, I was, like, Goodnight, Mr. Tom... I was, like, literally my 12-year-old playing an adult nurse in the second half, thank you. But I literally had to wear this, like, thing that, like, strapped my boobs down. I mean, there's not much there anyway, but I was literally, like, boobs strapped down playing a child, and it honestly makes you go insane. We did, like... When you're touring a play for a long time, you just sat on stage with, like, your hair in bunches being like, this is... I'm going insane. Like, I think I'm quite a sort of weird individual, and I'm not... Like, I'm not a child in the 1940s.
Yes.
So I think I think it was definitely
necessary.
Definitely necessary to go out of there. But no, we were just like, it was accidental, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really an actor. I had only very recently graduated, so I was just sort of bibbling about. And I don't really know why I started doing comedy, because I never particularly funny, but I just liked it. Just sort of a fangirl. Annoyingly, you know, like when I was 11, just like obsessed with The Office in a way that sort of completely eclipsed my personality, which was, you know, barely burgeoning as it was. And so when I left uni, I just sort of thought, well, I've got a lot of feelings and I've got an inkling I might be special. I guess I should be, you know, doing something creative. And comedy felt like, I don't know, I sort of... Even though I found it a bit harrowing, particularly at the beginning, I sort of love that there's a pass or fail measure about it. It's like, if you make people laugh, you pass. If you don't, it's failed.
Yeah.
So you can never sort of be, you know, really indulgent. Or it always feels useful in a way that maybe other things don't. So I just sort of thought, I don't know, I was just kind of drawn to it. But, and then we met exactly as you said we did. And,
That's true.
Maybe I should just answer all the questions.
Yeah.
See how we get on, and then you just interrupt.
Yeah.
If I go
we'll go back there, eat some chocolate, and if we hear anything that sounds...
There's snacks this week. Have you noticed the snacks?
God, I was in the dressing room alone for a little bit. There's a family-sized pack of mini cheddars.
Yeah.
There's four boxes of Pringles and a box of, like, miniature heroes.
I know. It feels like I've never had snacks before. But we did it for you guys.
Absolutely overwhelming.
Why? What did you hear?
We just... it wasn't particularly...
These girls love to eat. Love
this
snack.
This is the first time we've done it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really because of you.
Oh.
Just we thought we would do it.
Ouch.
But you're the first to benefit from it.
Yeah.
And you can take any of that. Anything that's not eaten at the end.
Oh, it's all in the bag already, Richard.
It's just one of the perks of being on this podcast.
Yeah.
And what was the sketch? I'm interested in sketch groups because I love sketches, right? And it's become sort of unfashionable.
Yeah.
Even when I was doing sketches, it had become unfashionable.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like deciding on names for sketch groups. Now, what was your first, the trio sketch group? What were you called? Because I saw it and then I've immediately forgotten what it was, but it was like a German...
We all saw it, Richard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you say it? I don't think I actually can.
I want to know why.
So imagine coming up with a name that's got an umlaut. A sort of character that you have to literally Google, copy and paste, because you can't write it with your own keyboard.
Yeah.
So stupid. So the name was Lebensmüde, which means tired of living in German, because Schadenfreude was taken. Oh my God, how embarrassing! And we did
stick with it for like a year. So, and do you remember three people waved that through?
Yeah,
you know, you're like, what? Why didn't like none? And that's why he got binned, because right, I think we sort of secretly blamed him for the name.
Did you do an Edinburgh show with that? Were you caught that in Edinburgh?
Yeah, yeah.
We did like 45 minutes in a pub.
Yeah.
And do you remember, there was a day when this German guy came up to us and he was like, "That's not funny." Do you know what that means? And we were like, "Yeah, tired of living." He's like, "No way, that's not cool." And we were like,
and then we were like 12:45 at the whatever pub it was called, Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde. He didn't come.
Yeah. Wow, because it's about Lazy Susan. If you Google Lazy Susan, you have to put Lazy Susan comedy.
Yeah, it's not great.
Lazy Susans.
It's not great. I don't know what to tell you.
Even speaking to my dad, because anytime I call my dad, so I'm Celeste Dring and Fred Parker, and every time I speak, like, appropriate of nothing, I never even ask him for any feedback. Even if we're not talking about it, like, how you doing? He's like, I've been thinking, you need to call yourselves Dring and Parker. No one is going to remember Lazy Susan. And when I Google it, I can't find you. And I'm like, I know, but it's too late.
It's too late now, Papa.
But yeah, it's not really a conversation. It's a sort of monologue that he does at me. But I do have that on a bi-weekly basis with my...
What was your thinking behind Lazy Susan?
It wasn't a lot of thinking behind it.
I feel like did we literally pick it out of a book? Yeah. It was literally like, ooh. And it was just I think we were like,
like a Womble would do it. That's how the Wombles chose their names.
Yeah, yeah. And it's anything that's less embarrassing than Lab, because it'd be like, it's late in a bar, it's Lebensmüde.
The bar is so low.
If you start with a really terrible name, then any name is better.
Yeah. But I also think we talked it around for too long. You know, when you're fussy and we didn't want to call ourselves a collection of animals, you know, because there's like the sheep, there's goose, mm-hmm. there's like, it's often the, you know, beasts. It's a dumb thing to name yourself after a set of animals. And so we didn't want to do that.
Well,
and
Dogs, but I got it down.
Oh, you wanted, I forgot about Disco Dogs. That was not aged well either.
I got a disco.
It's very difficult though. We had this, you know, I remember the various sketch groups we had, and the one we settled actually quite quickly in university. The sketch group we had was called the Seven Raymonds. The idea was like the two Ronnies, but it was seven people all called Raymond who'd got together and decided to do a comedy group together.
But
you always need to explain that to people, so it wasn't a great time.
And in a bar going like, no, and then, the two Ronnies. Yeah.
And then we had to come up with a name for that. We got an Edinburgh show quite late and we had to come up with a name, and we went ages and ages on it, to the extent that we got to one. We came up with the Potassium Permanganate Experience was our name, and we'd been going for so long that we all just went, yeah, it's brilliant, because we thought, oh, we could call it KMN04 and it sounds like, you know, it sounds like
what was the second word,
potassium permanganate. I think there was a sketch where I'd use potassium permanganate as a punchline.
It's a classic sketch, having done a
chemistry O level. And so then we thought we'll call it the Potassium Permanganate Experience, and then you get to Edinburgh and go, what? No one can understand what's going on. The Seven Raymonds, KMN04, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, and even if someone enjoys your show, they're not going to be able to tell anyone about it. So it's very self-feeding.
And then I did a sketch show with Steve Coogan, mm-hmm. Patrick Marber, Simon Munnery, Stuart Lee, and me. And we decided to call the Dumb Show, but lowercase, the Dumb Show, show. But I think that's because there was something similar.
And then every time you say it, you've got to be like, and it's all in
it's lowercase. There's no B on dumb.
Yeah.
And it's like the Dumb Show in you'd get in. Yeah. So it's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult to come
up. It's really difficult.
So I think Lazy Susan's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. At least it doesn't like hurt when you say it, like Lebensmüde did.
No, and I think your surnames are not. I don't think I don't think calling yourself by your surnames would be a good idea.
We'd never be able to decide on the order.
Yeah,
Be like Parker. It would have to be alphabetical, but then I would win.
Yeah,
it'd be Dring and Parker.
I'm not having that.
No
fucking way.
No way.
No way, mate.
It does. Your names do sound like an estate agent or something as well. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, Dring and Parker.
Dring.
Yeah.
Like a sort of Islington.
I mean, Dring is a weird name. I would just keep on coming going, Dring?
Actually, yeah.
Dring would be a good sketch Dring. Name. Just Dring. I like it.
What have I done?
Good ring a drink to it.
There she is.
Dring with Freddie
just
Parker.
Dring. Yeah. Dring.
Featuring.
Very big. I think you should definitely
just the corner
that.
Of my forehead on the poster.
So you did Edinburgh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you did Ed, and then...
And then we did Edinburgh.
Then did Edinburgh did... just as a duo.
Yes. Yes.
And so was it 2018 was sort of the big...
Yes.
The big year that it broke through.
Yes.
Uh-huh. With your show, which I don't need to tell you. Was called Forgive Me, Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing quite well, all right, so far. In yeah. which you took the Me Too movement and, you know, you
it was
gave
me...
it a comedic spin.
Yeah, you know, Me Too, the absolute lollageddon... lol train, get me aboard that lol train.
But in that show, so what I'm interested about in this show is that you had a running joke. Was it you who had a stalker who you were scared was going to kill you?
Yes.
Were you not worried that by doing a joke about that you might get a stalker who would try to kill you?
Well, I mean, that's, I think as a woman in any sort of prominent, well, just literally any prominent position, even however sort of mild or sort of, you're just always worried that a man's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Sadly, today. And that's even as people who are like literally sort of sketch comedians with a little show in Edinburgh. Like, it happens. It's sort of bonkers, really.
Yeah.
But it's absurd because you're like, you know, clearing up your wigs at the fig and bucket or whatever. Being like, I hope one of those weird men at the bar isn't going to talk to me or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah.
But yeah, you do just have to sort of navigate all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose by doing this, you're bringing that to the fore. And I know you've done. I mean, even the recent BBC Three show.
Mm.
There's lots. I mean, what's interesting, I think, is there's you. It's not just men that you're doing sketches about. And there's very funny sketches with women in it and about women's failings and foibles as well. But there's the sketch that got tweeted a lot from the first show is you doing a sort of 1980s. Workplace ring up if you've got complaints about us, sort of.
Yeah,
it was basically like a fake infomercial saying, like, you know, we're the people who are doing the show that you're watching, and if you hate it, like, you know, just tell us personally. Like, we really want to hear all of that feedback. You know, you want me to die? Oh, that's great. Thank you so much. I'm a slut. Thank you, sir. But we did get men just doing all of they watched it, and then they just sort of did it. At us, so it just sort of kind of just goes, it's just a horrible circle.
But they would have done it anyway, right? I think it's really interesting to hear, and I mean, it's great that it sort of is sort of coming out now that's but it is unbelievable that it's still,
and
it's,
I think
still
it's
happening,
it's
to that
not,
extent.
It's not an easy subject to make funny, and I think. You know, we never want to do anything that seems worthy or... Because a lot of our audience, or people watching ourselves, are really nice people. You know, any men watching our show, you know, most of them are just really nice people. So you don't want to be like, you are... So you want to be like, sort of...
Thanks for watching, assholes.
Yeah. So with Forgive Me With That and Sketch Hotline, it had to be like, does this feel funny? And does it feel... You know, because Sketch Hotline is a kind of slightly chaotic... energy to it, and we kind of lean into that 80s infomercial, you know, the sort of slow pans back, clumsy zooms, and like, you know, us not quite knowing what we're doing, and really taking this quite mean feedback on the chin. And with Forgive Me, Mother, we did struggle with the ending of that show a lot because it, you know, everyone knows that raping and being a horrible man is bad, so it's not like a interesting place to be working out of, particularly comedically. So that's why we kind of, truthfully, I hope, but kind of mind ourselves and looked at, well, what's funny about Freya when she's like catastrophizing and basically pivoting on the spot and really being like, oh, you know, there's threat everywhere. It kind of makes it sort of like not a safe pair of hands in the double act dynamic.
Mm.
And then I was sort of, every night would crack on to a different guy in the audience. It was sort of a predator-prey thing and a sort of like, you know, I'm basically, you know, drawing a guy in while she's trying to sort of push them away. So it was about really our dynamic and the way that we brought things upon ourselves. Sure. And I think that's how it managed to, you know, a lot of some people wouldn't agree, but be the right side of funny rather than...
But that's, you know, that's definitely true. You know, it's great to sort of see someone taking it head on, but in a, also in a funny way. I think that's, that is
that's
so important.
That's the skill as well. I think it's kind of easy to sort of... Not easy, but it's...
You can lecture before... Suddenly you're like, oh God, I'm just doing a lecture. Like, hey guys, this is bad. I don't know if you knew, but this is bad.
Yeah, it's sort of patronizing. It's kind of boring, you know. So the skill is to make light and to find the areas where it's funny or there's a bit of hypocrisy or there's something interesting in it that feels like it has a comedic slant. But yeah, I don't know. We did it on Australia, and I like cracked onto a guy in the audience, and it's clearly scripted. There's a lighting, there's mood change, there's Prince underscoring Pink Cashmere, one of my favourite Prince songs. And the woman who was, because I always would pick a guy that was with some, I'd never pick a lone guy watching the show, and I would always be slightly side-eyeing to look for... And this says a lot about my ego, but look for who's like laughing a lot and seems to be getting the show and looks like they'd be reluctant. You never want
the person who's like got a hockey mask on in the front row being like, ha, ha, ha. Yeah,
fool me once. So I always pick a friendly looking guy that's with people, and this guy was with his girlfriend, and I was talking to him, and she thought it was real and stood up and said, how about you go fuck yourself?
Yeah.
And it had never happened in like 100 shows. Like, it had never happened. And she had a handbag on.
It was
wild. Yeah. So women can be thick and bad too. And that's the moral of that story.
But it's great to see a sketch about, weirdly, like the day or the week that your series started, because I love sketch shows, and I think they're really important, and they don't really happen anymore. I think they're a great way to, especially new comics, especially...
Yeah, nurture new talent,
but also ideas, because, you know, you don't know what's going to work. And we had Jamie Dimitri on the other day, and, you know, he was saying the same thing, that, you know, if you're coming up with a character, you can't just write a sitcom about a character necessarily straight away. But, you know, I saw Emily Atack had a stand-up and sketch show, and I think, is that the only... sketch show on, and then there was yours as well. But like, it sort of seems insane that comics aren't being given. You know, and I love Emily, and I think she's great. But she's come from a sort of different direction to be given her own stand up and sketch show, and yet stand ups aren't being given these shows.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's well done for getting a show.
Thank you.
It seems to be like there aren't any. It's weird there aren't any male sketch shows, right? So that in a way. That I can think of, in a way, that's...
It's
not bad, because there's so many historically, but...
Mm. There's Famalam, which is not... Yes. I think that's the only other big British sketch, in terms of on TV, I think.
Because there's a lot of people doing sketches in Edinburgh, right? There's a lot of sketch groups.
Oh, there's so much sketch in Edinburgh,
And it's sort of weird that it's...
And also, it's not unfashionable in America.
No.
So it is sort of just here that it's died a little bit. I mean, I would say that we're quite... Not odd, but I guess we are sort of somewhere between sketch and character.
Yeah.
So we are quite different from, like, what you say would be a more typically male, often more premise-based or more, like, Cowards or something like that is the most recent, maybe, all-male TV sketch show I can think of. You know, Tim Key and Tom Basden.
Yeah, I mean, a few, because, like, they've tried, they don't really give anything a go, like... We Are Clan got a sketch show, and the Matt Crosby and all that guy, those guys got a sketch show, but only like a pilot or a very short series or whatever.
And I think it's, I don't know, I don't know the answer. I do think it's obviously the medium that has been most usurped by online content.
Yeah.
If you want to watch a funny sketch or whatever, you go online, you look at your favourite comedians or people that retweet good stuff. And so I suppose that audience demand is not as clear, or they don't need TV to be produced
in
that
way. It's the attention span, isn't it? I think often like you watch like one sort of funny little thing online and you're never like, give me 30 more.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, give me one after the other. So I think
But I do think it's a shame because it's unsustainable, I think. Well, maybe that's too broad a statement, but it's not that sustainable to make online content for free or have a buy me a coffee or whatever. You do think if these, a lot of online comedians that are making their own sketches online, if they got together in a room and got to write and be produced properly and stuff, it could make something really exciting, you know? So it's a massive shame. And I don't really understand it because I don't think it's that risky, really. And it's expensive to produce, obviously, sketches, multiple location, multiple setups, costume change, whereas, you know, reality panel is a lot cheaper to produce. Yeah. So anyway, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just sort
No, I know, but I mean, there's so much great comedy talent. There's so much stuff coming through Edinburgh and there's so many people trying to be.
Yeah.
I sort of, you know, even just from a stand-up saying you can do some stand-up and then just chuck a couple of sketches in. There's nothing like that, you know, which is, I think Sarah Millican sort of had something approaching that, but it was still sort of almost a game show as well. And seems so weird to me. But I think, and it does, your stuff, I think, if you home produced it, it needs to be on TV, what I mean? Which is, it's almost, because we're so used to seeing people doing like no budget sketches, that it's sort of weird. It feels like a huge budget watching your show.
Yeah, and it's a sort of different...
And it was not. So some of the actors were in our own clothes.
I think it is just a different medium as well. And I think you've got to lean into the fact that it can look slightly more sort of cinematic than like someone with their phone at home. But I think that has almost become like a subgenre now. And people respond to things so quickly that I think... You know, there would have been no point in us doing like a satirical sketch because it's already, someone has literally done it within like half an hour and it's excellent and it's got like a million views. So then we'd wheel on like 8 months later being like, God, the Oscars, am I right? And people would be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we try and do zeitgeist, but not topical.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting stuff because, I mean, like some of it starts from quite a small premise, like a fly being in the room, being annoying, and then goes off somewhere surreal. And some of it's like, I like the Hot Nuns is just great because it looks like it's going to be like running characters and it's just a really lightning joke.
Yeah.
But it's great.
That's the thing when you've got no budget as well. You want to do all these like 30 second quick fun sketches and they're like, can you be 3 minutes and in a flat? Just to make it go a bit further. So we didn't, there were like sketches that we had to drop that were like that basically because there was no, couldn't afford to shoot them.
But I'd love to, I sort of feel like with the French act, the woman in a French film written by a man.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to see a featured film length version of that sketch. I really feel I could watch that forever.
Yeah.
So I hope you'll
do that. I hope for the right reasons.
I think because it's very funny.
but it would, that was filmed in Wolverhampton.
But it would sustain though, I think. I think like the character you play is sort of so cute. You sort of feel sorry for this guy.
It comes to me so
easy.
He's
so close to the surface.
Yeah, it's absolutely devastating really how easy that is that guy is to play. literally don't have to try at all. Just put a fake beard and then here he is.
Yeah, that's nice. That's very nice.
Well, there's a lot you have to come to terms with when you like watch yourself play a man. You're wow. Like when you play Thomas and when I play Pete, I look like my dad in the 80s and it's not good. I showed my boyfriend and I don't think we've recovered. So I can just see there's a hesitation in his eyes now that was not there before.
Is it fun playing? Because you do quite a lot of male characters. Is there a fun element in that for you?
I suppose it's freeing not to have to be concerned with how you look at all. Like I think you know, with being raised a girl and all that stuff, it's not to keep drawing it back to this, but I think you don't quite realise how much you're sometimes trying to appear a certain way all the time, or you know. I don't know. So there's something very freeing about just playing a bloke and being like, yeah, it's completely permissible to look really unattractive. And that's fine, you know.
And we've always done like drag, haven't we, in all of our shows. But I think we've never... I think we weirdly were just like, oh, they're just like a funny character.
Yeah.
And they just happen to be a dude. I think it was never like, men are hilarious. I wonder what it would be like if we saw them on stage. It was always just like, oh, yeah, it's Steve and Pete. I don't know. We just sort of wrote them and then there was no one else to play them. So it's like, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Good. Let me ask you an emergency question. We'll come back. It's really fascinating. That's all right, mate.
What's an emergency question?
I'm going to ask you an emergency question. This is just my stupid questions. Okay. Don't worry. If you could go into a chrysalis and emerge as anything you wanted, what would you transform into? It can be absolutely anything. It can be you has changed, or it can be someone else, or it can be anything. What would you like to be?
I mean, oh gosh. Because I want to, I want to say like some sort of animal, but yeah. Am I locked into this?
You're locked in. If you do it, that's what you have to. If technology becomes available.
Yeah, okay.
Freya, why aren't you just saying dog? Because I know it's dog.
Why don't you shut up, Celeste? How about a cup of shut up?
Did you message me once and you were like, oh, I think I realise I don't want to get a dog. I want to be a dog.
It's like, I said that to you in confidence.
Dog's a good choice.
Yeah.
I do have a lot of affinity with dogs. Yeah. Possibly too much. Okay. I just like a plucky dog.
Okay.
So maybe just...
But like liking a plucky dog and wanting to be a plucky dog are two different things.
Yeah. I think what I'll say is I'll pencil dog.
Okay.
And I'll give it a bit more thought. And then as soon as the technology is confirmed, then I'll give you my final answer. But for now, I think a dog, a bit like Tintin's dog.
Yeah. Snowy.
Snowy. Good. In fact, I'd just say Snowy.
Yeah, Snowy's good. Have you got anything you'd like to change into?
I'd just like to be some kind of athlete, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, this is so embarrassing, but when lockdown first happened, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I was like, I'm going to learn how to do a backflip. And I was like, I'm going to do it. And there's something in my head, occasionally when I'm running, and I live in Ali Pali and it's all hills, and I've recently quit smoking. I'm trying to like get healthy and stuff, and I'm always like pathetically sort of dragging myself up this hill, getting overtaken by walkers. And anyway, and I just have fantasies about just being really fit. And if there's a really banging track on, I'll just have a little daydream about like backflipping onto the dance floor. Yeah. Okay. So I'd love to emerge as some sort of gymnast, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
A dog and a gymnast.
Yeah.
You could be a gymnast with a dog and you could still be together.
You could jump through those hoops.
Yeah,
I would love that.
The double act will live on. That's nice to know, isn't it?
So you're pretty close. I mean, like with double acts, it can go one of two ways.
Yes.
Well, for me, it's
you
gone,
tell us, yeah.
Okay. For mine, it's gone quite badly.
Yeah.
You shared rooms, like when you were staying in Edinburgh, you like shared a room.
Yeah, we couldn't afford the rent. Money, so extortionate there.
We had to share £700 each to share that room.
Yeah.
Oh. Is it you're like, good morning, Bert.
Hello. I talk in my sleep as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember like waking up with the light on and Celeste just looking at me, but waking myself up talking and just, I don't know, just a look of fear in your face and then maybe sort of being like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Like 2 a.m.
Also, I find it fascinating for someone who's like a bit nervous about being attacked or something like that, that you naturally went in deep sleep. You know, I'm in fetal, or I'm like, Freya is literally arms in the air, like, She's like that. She's like sort of starfish. Complete, sort of position of surrender. Blows my mind.
Very trusting when I'm asleep.
We are very close. Yeah. We actually haven't gigged for a long time because I find it very stressful.
Right.
And there's been lockdown, so I've had my sort of opportunity to. It's a bit like, you know, a big skipping rope on the playground, and if you just hesitate for a bit too long, you're like, oh, I'm never going to get in now.
Yeah.
So I've slightly left it a while. So we probably don't spend as much time together as we did when we were gigging. But we are writing all the time. True. Yeah.
But I think when you're gigging, particularly like doing sketch, it is like doing like a play.
Yeah.
And you've just got to rehearse.
Well, particularly when no one laughs.
Yeah. You've just got to rehearse just so much. So like when you're doing Edinburgh, we'd literally be doing like 16-hour days.
Yeah.
Which, thinking about it now, like, I can't. That must have been very
inefficient. But it's also just slower, the process, because you kind of both got to be on board with whatever you're doing. So a stand-up can adapt a lot quicker. You know, if you had an idea on the way on the tube, you can just knock it out, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's fine to an extent. But if you're both doing that, it's just chaos.
Yeah.
So I think even to just get on the same page takes a lot of time. I think that's also why sketch acts don't tend to survive as long, particularly doing Edinburghs and then, you know.
I think as well, because there's like no money in it.
Yeah.
So I think that's another like massive reason why you can't sort of get a group of like four people together to not earn any money but spend all your time doing this like.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think that is a really tough. I mean, the only good thing about it is if you're dividing an Edinburgh deck between four people, that's better than just having one person.
Yeah.
But that is still, it's still not great.
Yeah,
it is the you know, you are reliant on, but it's finding that, and obviously you've got this empathy and you're a similar sense of humour, and because it's the style of it is you know, which I love with any comedy that I've, and I say this all the time, but any comedy that you end up really loving, it takes you a little moment to adjust your brain to get into it, and it's your stuff isn't really like anybody else's. I don't think, you know what I mean. I can't say, oh, well, I can see where you've got that idea from. I can see that, you know, you've come in with your own sensibility, and it's really great, and the characters are great. But you've obviously got there together, right?
I would say so. Yeah, because we are on the same page in a lot of ways, but I would also say we're quite different.
Yeah,
and so I think that when that happens, if you can harness it in the right way, you can produce something that's greater than the sum of your parts, something that you couldn't produce alone.
I think it's weird because often the things that do create tension and do make it quite challenging to work with each other, annoyingly, like, they are also the things that will help you to produce good work.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes we've sort of, you know, especially after Edinburgh, we'll have like a debrief and, you know, it's awful.
Yeah.
We have the terrible debrief.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, but the work's really good. And we do make each other laugh, but you can often just get, you get in your own way and you can get in each other's way. So it's like, it's just this constant sort of learning how to kind of negotiate and learning sort of, you know, picking your battles, I think, with this stuff.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of stuff separately, right, as well, right? Which I think is quite, it makes a big difference. And I think it's a pleasure, hopefully, to come back together, but also you can do your own stuff.
What? We're out of the hairiest bit as well now, because the bit where it's hard is when you've been doing it for a few years, but you're not really successful enough to make a living. So you're both sort of doing your crap day jobs that make you feel a little bit crap.
Yeah.
So you're a bit burnt out, a bit tired.
Mm.
And then you're going to gig, you know, a small gig that'll be nice for not very much money, and then, you know, it doesn't maybe go brilliantly. Or you're just doing long hours until it starts to click enough that you're like, oh, we can relax a little bit now. We don't have to be trying to do these other jobs so much.
What kind of jobs were you doing?
Well, now I feel like an arsehole because all I did was a bit of tutoring, so it really wasn't that hard. But
down the mines.
Yes, I was tutoring down the mine. But yeah, I did tutoring. I also did, I looked after posh old people. Yeah.
Only posh old people. Any non-posh people.
So it's basically an overpriced, well, it could only be really richer families that could afford it, because it was, and I don't know how this was allowed, and I don't know if the company still exists, because I was not vetted, I had no training, and I was just going around to old people who lived alone, being like, you know, hello, Mrs. Gent, and I read to a woman who was going blind for a few years,
and she made you sit in the sun, and you got burned. Do you remember? No. I remember you because you were sunburned on one side of your face and you were like, can I just go and put some sun cream on? And she was like, no.
Sounds like I made that up to cover up something embarrassing that I did. No, I worked for an old Italian woman called Mrs. Jen, who had a giant head and a tiny little body. She looked like a Bo Selecta character. And she needed an oxygen tank. And she was going blind, but she was a wealthy old Italian lady. She'd married an English gentleman. And I was just a bit of extra help. But she had a live-in carer, and she was so horrible to work for that she had gone through most of the live-in carers. And by now, she was really scraping the barrel. And the woman that was working for her was a Russian woman who was nearly as old as her. She must have been in her mid-60s to early 70s. Anyway, there was just this surreal moment where they were having an argument and Mrs. Jen wanted the old Russian lady to vacuum. And she was like, I want vacuum. I have my break. I shouldn't be doing the accent. Why am I doing that? cut that out, please. So
anyway, you're versatile. Never apologise, okay?
Thank you.
Never apologise.
My enabler. So I basically got caught between these two elderly women saying, can you please hoover? No, I don't want to hoover. She doesn't want to hoover. Tell her to hoover. I'm the boss. Literally shaking a stick, shouting, I am the boss. Unbelievable. Anyway, I just went into the hallway, turned the vacuum cleaner on so that Mrs. Jen, who thought work was getting done when it wasn't. And at that point, I was like, I have to quit this. I have to stop doing this. And I couldn't because I needed that sweet dosh to do sketch comedy.
Wow, yeah. Well, look, you both, I'm quite excited about the stuff that you have been doing. Like, both of you have been working in movies.
The movies.
Very exciting. Mm. So, Freya, you're in Jurassic World.
Yeah, I'm in Jurassic World, yeah.
What, are you playing? Are you a dinosaur?
I'm a dinosaur. Yeah. A little... just like a little Gigi Velociraptor. She's new on the scene. She's got some big ideas.
What I want to have, I've said this many times, but I'm hoping if I say it enough, it'll happen.
Uh-huh.
What I want to happen in the Jurassic World Park universe is for them to just open a park successfully.
And no one gets hurt.
No one gets hurt, but just everyone looks at the dinosaurs. Just because there's been a lot of attempts. They've learned from the lessons, and now we've opened it, and it's all right.
There's actually an incredible safety officer.
Yeah.
She's great at her job.
And they've just worked out how to keep dinosaurs in cages. And it's fine.
Cages actually have locks on them.
Yeah.
The workers are unionised. It's just actually a really great place to work.
So is that the plot?
Plot of Jurassic Park.
Great. I'll definitely watch it then.
Yeah.
What is it like being in Jurassic World? And what are you in Jurassic World? And what is it? What's going to happen? Do the dinosaurs win this time?
Look.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so briefly. Why did I ever mention it? I mention it because I'm like, I am a Jurassic Park like fan.
It's exciting. Nerd.
I love dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And I love movies. Mm. No, basically, it was like an absolute dream of like a little job. It was me, the lads at a sketch group called The Pin, and Ahi Shah, who's been on your show. The director emailed us and was like, hey, love your stuff. I was like, come on, that can't be true, Colin. Love your stuff. Do you want to come and be in my dinosaur movie if you're free? let me just check my diary, Colin. Please come and do it. It'd be lots of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were all... But because it was 20... When was it? Like 2020? August? October? No.
I don't know, it's just Jurassic
She Park, stopped listening. She stopped listening. Didn't want to hear it.
He went to my junk. I think that's what happened.
Email
just spammed him by mistake.
we all had to be like locked in this hotel. We all had to like be in quarantine in a hotel.
Right.
So the whole thing was just surreal. Every single day we were all like, I can't believe that this is happening. And you'd be on set being like,
you see Jeff Goldblum at the buffet.
Just literally mooching about.
Yeah.
And we me and The Pin, Ahisha, we're all great guys, but we're not the sort of young, hot young ingenues. We're all like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Even when we're filming, we'd be like, so we'd sort of leave it and then someone would be like, guys, we're in Jurassic Park. It was just a total nerd fest, and we just play some like, technicians basically are working the dinosaur park.
Right.
And he basically, it's because it's like a sort of scene with lots of like tech talk. I think he was like, I'll just, the director, like, he lives in the UK and he's just a real like comedy nerd. And I think he just thought it'd be fun to get some comics in it at the end. But yeah, it was really great. And it was just, yeah, it was completely surreal. And we're probably all cut from it. So no, we did have a conversation where we all worked out like, because you don't ever read the whole script as well, but we worked.
Can they not cut you because you say something?
There's one. Yeah, we were all basically like, my hand points at this thing at this moment, and another character said it's crucial information. So it's like, if all else fails, my left hand is in Jurassic Park, pointing at a screen.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, you're doing films as well, so you don't have to.
Yeah, thank God.
Serrano. I'm very excited about Serrano with Peter Dinklage.
It's not very good.
Is it not?
No.
It seems so. He doesn't have a big nose. Is that that he's?
No. He is. Short.
A little person.
Yes. So that's the way that they're telling it.
Right.
But yeah.
He's good though, Peter Dinklage.
He is good. Yeah. He is. Yeah. He was. We did a scene that was on a stage, and I was watching. You know, like a lady at the theatre watching the show or whatever, and he has to do this big sword fight, and every time he had to start the sword fight, he basically had to turn and face me, and I didn't know whether to look at him or not, because he was sort of looking very intently my way, so I would like look around and then looked a bit, and then I was like, oh, I'm just going to look at him, I guess, because I'm being weird, so I looked at him, and then he was like, sorry, she put me off, she's looking at me, and then I was like, oh no, oh, I'm sorry, Peter. Because there's this weird thing when it's like a big actor, you sort of, I go too far the other way where I don't want to be try hard and annoying, so I'm almost rude because I'm like, well, I don't want to give you the impression that I'm like, you know, cloying for your, being like, hey, I'm in a sketch comedy. So I just don't, I'm just
Peter,
almost.
Peter, do you like sketch comedy?
Yeah.
But you're in the trailer, which I love.
Am I?
In the background.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, but I basically, because I was in the background of this shot, I thought it would be a day shoot, tops, and they were talking about taking me out to Sicily for 3 weeks. This was during the pandemic. So I thought, great, I'll do 1 or 2 days shooting, spread out. The rest of the time I'll be in Sicily, maybe I'll get some writing done, you know, learn to do a backflip, that sort of thing. And it ended up being 10 or 11 night shoots in a row in a corset. So I'd get up about 11, I'd be in costume makeup on set for about 3 in the afternoon and then released about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was not worth it. Also, the Italian government took 45%.
Ooh.
Yeah. But I hope you enjoy the film, Richard.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say you don't think it's very good?
I don't know. Is that bad? Oh, that probably is really stupid of me, actually. And I don't entirely mean that. I don't think that it's bad, but I do think that it's maybe a bit of a missed opportunity.
Okay.
It's a great story, so it could be great. And it's not helping myself.
Yeah.
There's a man over here literally covering his face, so worried for what this is going to do to my
career. You're saying, if you directed it and you'd been Serrano.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah.
I do have quite a big nose, actually, so I could, maybe rock it.
It's
prominent,
a good
for sure. So there's been times where, you know, if you're setting up a shot, sometimes the cameraman turns the camera, like the frame, around so you can see what the framing is. And genuinely, sometimes my nose is in shot and I'm not. It's just hovering in the air in the frame.
Maybe you could have said to Peter Dinklage, you know, I know what things it's like for you, because I've got quite a big.
Yeah.
I've got quite. Yeah. Not Serrano de Rezac big, but it's, you know. It's,
yeah, you could email him. Yeah, it's never too late.
And he listens to the pod, right?
Probably, I'm sure he does.
Friend of the pod.
I was going to ask if you could get him on the podcast, but, you know, you've probably burned that bridge there with all the staring and the saying it's film shit. How about Last Night in Soho? You're in that. That's a movie as well.
Yeah, shot that after Freya's hen do. Literally shooting like drops of water in my eye because they were so red from the tiredness. I was in that. It was shot a long time ago though. I don't remember. But yeah.
Is that pre-pandemic? Oh yeah, it must have been 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is that what you wanted? Do you want to be Hollywood movie stars? Slapping each other in the face at awards ceremonies, or do you want to?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like we fight anyway, so why not get paid for it?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, movies are great, yeah. Right? If you've got a fun part and it's a fun job, I think we just, girls just want to have fun.
Yeah.
But it's like extremely long hours. And I know people, like, no one gives a shit about those long hours though, because everyone's just like, well, you're in a movie.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to do more proper acting, definitely.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And do you think that, so if it was a choice between doing comedy and acting, would you go with that? I mean, you can still do comedy in acting, but would you go for acting and...
Do you mean no writing anymore?
Yeah, or... no writing and no, let's say no sketch comedy and no writing sketch comedy. I'm trying to break the two of you up.
Yeah, I can sense that, actually. Yeah. So the vibes sort of change suddenly. I think it's like it's a bit like if you're a writer performer, if you do loads of writing, you're like, I just want to perform, and then it just is vice versa. You're like, I just want to write. So I feel like you'd probably do drama for ages, and then be like, I just want to be in something where I can just be a little dickhead, and it's just really fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not really a problem for me at the minute. To make that decision.
It's so. Sort of whether you feel, because I like doing a bit of acting, but I get quite bored quite quickly of acting.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do that where I was in for a day or whatever.
Mm.
But I'd see myself as a comedian.
I think I definitely, because I do stand-up and I do improv as well, so yeah. I like love doing live stuff. I think if it was like, if I could never do that again, like I found the fact, like not doing that over the pandemic just so... I mean, obviously not the hardest thing that was happening over the last 2 years, but it's a real, like, it's sort of in you, isn't it, if you want to, like, be a dickhead in front of people,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So...
I think I'd go more actor-writer is what I would like to be.
Yeah.
I think I do sketch and I enjoy it, but I don't...
So this is where it ends.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I like doing sketch comedy, but I find comedy quite pressured, or I worry that I'm not good enough at it sometimes. Whereas acting and stuff, I feel more confident, or like I am more assured of my skills.
But it's like you said that, you know, with comedy, you do know, do know whether it's working or not. And even if it's, you know, if it's a small audience, you can tell from the atmosphere, even if it's not like lots of lols.
Yeah.
You can tell that they're enjoying it or they're not enjoying it. And you can know it's you're assessed every single day. Every working day.
Yeah.
And so you know how things are going.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that, you know, that you're good at it because you've done it and it's worked.
Thank you.
You are,
believe I drove the conversation there.
You're very good. Yeah. I don't know what with TV, I don't know how much people watch, you know, and it's BBC Three, right? So they've relaunched BBC Three, which is great, which is a really good thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that kind of, the viewing figures of that are. If you noticed any, since it's been on TV, have you been recognised in the street more, or is it...
I only have once, and it was like, you have to, when you're an actor, you have to have, like, pictures taken, headshots, so when people are looking for, trying to get you jobs, that you've got a nice posh picture. And I was having some taken on the towpath in Camden about 2 weeks ago, and this guy went by on a bike. He went, "I enjoyed your show," but it was very disarming.
Yeah,
because he didn't stop. He just like,
but that's good though.
Oh, I much prefer that than a sort of. He tried to drag me in the canal, and was like, "I loved it."
If I was riding a bike and tried to yell a comment to some, I'd definitely accidentally steer it in the canal. I wouldn't pull that off.
Yeah, it'd be tragic. Yeah,
yeah.
And but there's a good, you know, you've got a good cast of like all the your generation of comedians in this show as well, which is nice. So you spot people, you know, John Cairns is a very funny sketch.
I'm obsessed with him. He's so good.
And he's one of our favourite like live acts as well. We would just like if you'd be on a bill with him, he's just like, it's magical. He's just so good. So we were really really thrilled that he was.
And James Acaster, you assault James Acaster.
You assault him, don't you?
Yeah.
That was quite. I mean, he's in a couple of sketches, but that's one he doesn't really have to do.
Didn't even know it was being filmed.
He doesn't have to do much in that one apart from it's caressed.
Yeah, I had to sort of jump him on this quite narrow table. And
someone else told you to do it.
I wrote it and then I cast him. So
I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. So I'm just evening the score, fellas. So but yeah, I used to have to jump on this kind of very narrow table and I had to hike myself up and would sort of hop up on my shin, and I didn't quite realise during the day, and then I looked in the evening, rolled it, a huge bruise just from jumping up on this table over and over. But I was going to get him to sign it, but it was too late.
what a nice lad, though.
Yeah, lovely.
And he's all right.
He's all right, yeah. But
he's better than Ed Gamble. That's just, at least if he had Ed Gamble in, that would have been...
Come on, let's not get involved in this. Come on.
I should also say I love the MASH report, which I presume is come to an end.
R.I.P. Yeah, I think so. I mean, maybe they'll get someone else in, but it was very much Nish's show.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it was such an awesome thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
So fun, so unbelievably... Sometimes so relaxed that you're like, guys, we do need to do some stuff. We can't just all be in the same room and just have coffee. But no, it was super fun. And yeah, it's a shame. It's gone. Yeah.
And I haven't seen The Windsors. And the reason I haven't seen it is because I was trying to write a sitcom that was about, it was about the Russian royal family, but it was all based on...
The Romanovs.
Yeah, but it was all based on our royal family. So it was about Rasputin, really. But, so I didn't watch it but I've heard great things about it. And you work with Harry Enfield, right? In that, were you a fan of Harry's? Were you aware of Harry? Was that a bit before your time?
I definitely was aware of. Like he was big when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Him and Kathy Burke.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was aware. Yeah.
Is that sort of intimidating to be when you're working with a comedian of that sort of stature as?
Yeah, definitely.
So are you Eugenie in it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, also Beatrice is Ellie...
Ellie White.
Yeah, who's doing a sketch show as well.
Yes.
So is there some connection to being in the Windsors and playing Prince Andrew's daughters? Do you feel a bit dirty now now you know about Prince Andrew?
I thought he was such a good guy. I still can't believe it.
No, I mean, I don't. There's not going to be any more.
Right.
And I think the allegations about him came out after that because it's almost like the show was better. Or I think the writers found it easier when the royals were less in the news and when they actually had really dramatic stories of their own. It actually was harder to satirise, I think, for them.
It's not funny when he's actually a nonce.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I feel bad. I feel like we should be doing. I feel like we should have researched you a bit and be like, Fist of Fun. Tell us about that.
I can tell you about it.
Yeah,
you were. You didn't watch Fist of Fun, right? You were too young to watch.
Fist of Fun. Sorry.
I'm very old. I'm very old. You're very young. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
There you go. So you can get it on DVD. I'll send you the DVD.
I don't think I have a DVD player.
That's the problem. I've got quite a lot of those DVDs in my garage. And that was the problem with lockdown. Really fucked up the last vestige. The last people who had DVD players died during lockdown. I'm old age. Didn't get more COVID because I'd go on tour and I'd sell DVDs after the show.
Yeah.
And it went, in the two noughties, you could sell 20, 30 DVDs after a show.
Yeah.
And then it went down. And then it was about three a tour. Yeah. And now if I go on tour, I won't be able to...
How many boxes are we talking?
I've got a lot. Well, I've got a lot of DVDs of all different shows. So, yeah, it's a shame. Yeah. I might give them away. You can use them, hang them up, just scare birds away and stuff.
Yeah. Coasters.
Yeah. Coasters. There's all sorts of...
Sort of rectangular frisbee.
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, about the case, not the DVDs, obviously. Circular.
Yeah. No, you should watch Fist of Fun, because I think, it would help you with your sketch writing.
We are looking for a mentor.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe don't look at Fist of Fun. Well, let me just check if there was anything else I really wanted to ask you about. I think I've done everything... Oh, I tell you what, I really enjoyed the East Coast Listening Post I was listening to today.
Thank you.
Which when did you make that? So that was sort of a parody of
This American Life, yeah. Oh my God, when did we do it? 2015? 16?
2016.
So that predated the kind of the success, the Edinburgh show, the 2018 Edinburgh show. Yeah, interesting, it's good. Because it really captures the the sound of those things just does sound like a real one.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a slight parody of This American Life and those types of podcasts, but it's also, like all parodies, a bit of a love letter to to it as well.
Yeah, because we were just obsessed with This American Life, and we did ask Ira Glass if he wanted to like do a fake advert on the show. I haven't heard back from him yet. Still waiting for the com.
Yeah. Apparently, Ira Glass. Do you guys know who Ira Glass is? Yeah. No. Okay.
I want to hear it.
No, just didn't he get his flat was like he got investigated because his flat was so dirty that his neighbours complained. And like the,
weird,
I was going to say the
guy.
Council, but that's not what it's called in America. But you know what I mean? That someone had to get involved and like come around and check. Yeah, the feds, the goddamn feds.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because he lived like so.
Oh my god.
In such sort of squalor, basically.
God.
And he's there going like, "Hey, I'm Mary Glass. I'm great." You know, like he's sat there with a pristine copy of the New Yorker, and he got his rat infested.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
I would never have said that.
Stuff.
If I had to name a dirty man, it would be Ira. Anyway, wow. I'm going to have to look that up when I'm on the tube.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll find out about that. Yeah. Well, do you know if you've got more of the sketch show?
We don't know. We haven't asked, to be fair.
No.
We haven't asked.
Not ready. Not ready for an answer. But we don't know yet.
I'm almost scared in case they're like, and we want to shoot it this summer because we just...
Yeah, it's bittersweet. If you got more, you're like, I have to write more. Because the thing about sketch shows, they eat ideas, shows. You know, you've got 1 minute of material and then the idea's dead. Whereas if you're at a sitcom, you can drag that idea out across maybe even a series or like a whole narrative arc. And sketch shows, you know, that's why, I think that's part of why they've died in this country is ideally you need a writer's room or you need more people. You know, that's why sketch is so successful in America, I think, because they have whole teams of writers generating ideas. It's hard to get enough together, isn't it? I would say we're just two. But
is there anything from the show that you would like to take out and make into a sitcom or into a bigger
Hot Nuns? An obvious choice.
Hot Nuns would be good. I mean, I'd like to see more of the Hot Nuns
just being hot around town.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I'm still hot.
Wow.
I mean, I do love Stephen Pete. They do have the two northern men.
Yeah.
You'd like to do, Vic and Bob thing? Is it Catterick?
Oh, yeah, Vic and Bob did a show called Catterick, which I loved, and it was sort of filmed all like around where I'm from. And I would love to make something up there. I would love to sort of, because in our first Edinburgh show, was Pete in it?
No, anyway, because I played the girlfriend.
Oh, you played the girlfriend. We had like a whole sort of love story with like this slight loser guy, Steve, and I don't know. So I'd quite like to do something with them, but
We're writing other narrative things at the sitcom, so I think brains are slightly, they're quite separate in my mind, sketch and then narrative sitcom, but some sort of hybrid would be.
So that sounded like a genuine plea of like, Freya, we actually don't have time to do that. we're not doing that, mate.
Shut that shit down.
Celeste, you're hurting.
Dream on your own time, bitch.
Oh, well, brilliant. Well, it's really lovely to have you.
Sorry, that was the end.
No, it doesn't.
It's also very off brand for me. I can't say bitch with any confidence. You know, people are like, whatever, bitch. No, just it's not really me. I take it back. It
do check out, if you haven't seen Lazy Susan, it's all on the iPlayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, also the East Coast Listening Post Series 2 is still on.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think it's BBC
Sounds.
It's on BBC Sounds.
And Wonka, you're going to be in Wonka as well?
If they don't cut me, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the attitude you want, isn't it? That's the vibe, isn't it?
And amazing. There's loads of places to see you. No plans to do anything live at the moment, though?
At the minute,
no
but never say never.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you so much
for
coming
in
and
doing
the show. It's been absolutely fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Lazy Susan!
Thank you.
Freya and Celeste. Listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guests Freya Parker and Celeste Dring, aka Lazy Susan. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for providing this musical entertainment while I speak. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of his team from Go Faster Stripe. I'm indebted to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. I'm indebted to the bank as well, the National Westminster Bank, for much money, also a mortgage as well with someone else. I'm indebted to a lot of people, but they don't mind. I would also like to thank these following people. Anthony, red lorry, yellow lorry, Lytton. Tried to trip me up, and I tripped up on Lytton. Guy Morgan, Mary Docker, Paul, Rushy, Rush, that's his nickname, Rushy. Colin Anderton, Gaz Morgan, Alan Yates, Slopes, James Davies, Jim Williams, Fee Craig, John Justa, Lisa Nesbitt, John Newman, Paul Duggan, James Hardjaninata. That's right, James Hardjaninata. Joe Bagger Donuts, Adam Campbell, Jamie Reed, a.k.a. Teddy Hannon, Sabine and David Stephen Brown, Hamish The Rock, Dave H, Lee Wolfenden, Sue and Steve, Paul Gardner, Duncan Raggett, Chris Keegan, Miriam Sharp Pearson, Kerris Woodruff, Rufus Von Balcony, Neil McLaughlin, I am him, or Neil McLaughlin, I am him, Stephen Cooper, Thomas Mannion, Julie Gitt, Julie Giles. That's all the people. This is a Sky Potato, Go Faster Stripe and Fuzz production. Please head to richterring.com/gigs to see if we're doing any more rehearsal gigs near to you, and then come and watch those gigs because that helps us very much. Thanks for participating in this podcast. Good morning.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.